So part three of Hebrews chapter 11, we may run out of letters of the alphabet. This is 11C, because we're not in a hurry to get through this chapter. This whole letter is written to encourage Jewish Christians in Jerusalem, for the most part, who were ostracized by their family, who no longer were welcome in their culture because of their belief in Jesus, and who weren't at home in the world system because they believed in Jesus. And it was like constantly swimming against the current in a river, and they're discouraged. So this letter was written to encourage them. It doesn't hit us 21st century Gentile Christians in the same way, although we've run into some wonderful things in here that talk about who our high priest is, who Jesus is, and what we have under this new covenant through him. But Hebrews chapter 11 is one we can all relate to, because it's examples that are given to us from history of people who lived their lives, different personalities, different people. God asked different things of them. The thing that characterizes all of them is they lived out their life. Their story, which is history, declares to us that some people at least believe that it is worth it to do things God's way. And if you're a person that wants to do things God's way and you feel like you're all alone and you're swimming against the current, these examples from history, from the Bible, are tremendously encouraging. I don't think, for me personally, any one of them is more encouraging than the one we start to look at tonight and looking at Abraham. We'll be 2 weeks looking at Abraham. We're just going to look at his calling and the beginning of his journey. There's a lot of wonderful things to say. We're only going to look at three verses 8, 9, and 10. But I am going to also read verses 13 through 16, because it's sort of a summary of what we're studying tonight and what we'll be studying next week. It gives us the perspective, the mindset, if you will, that it took for these people to live their lives this way. I believe that will work for us as well. And I find this passage tremendously encouraging. But as we're going to do every single time when we look at every new character, I want us to start by reading verses 1 and 2 of chapter 12, which comes at the end of this list. Who knows how long? Could take us months to get through chapter 11. But chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, start with the word therefore. So you Bible students know that when you see the word therefore, it means you are about to hear something that is directly connected to what has just been said. So I always want to start with this, and it helps us if you're just jumping in and you haven't been here for any of the installments so far. It helps us to understand why we're looking at these people. What is it about them that we are studying? Why are we doing it? Why was it written and preserved all these years? I'm going to read from my Amplified Bible, Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. Therefore then, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses who have borne testimony to the truth, let us strip off and throw aside every encumbrance, every unnecessary weight, and that sin which so readily and cleverly clings to and entangles us. And let us run with patient endurance and steady and active persistence the appointed course of the race that is set before us, looking away from all that would distract us unto Jesus. That's why this is written, so that we could run our race with renewed encouragement, simply because there are historical persons, many of whom were operating under far more pressure than any of us are. And certainly the recipients of this letter knew these stories. And he's just saying, just look at what made them tick. What gave them the strength to keep going? And that'll help you keep going. and it'll help you to run your race as well. Last week we looked at Noah, and tonight we're going to look at another example of someone who was called to a long obedience in the same direction. The last two characters we looked at, Noah and Enoch, are singular characters to me because they lived in a world that the Bible said every thought and every imagination of humanity was always evil and violent all the time. That is probably the worst indictment this planet has ever had. And God said, it's breaking my heart. I can't stand to watch the damage it's doing. I'm just going to start over. I'm going to wipe everybody out. During that period of time, the several hundred years before it got to that point where God saw it as unfixable, two guys stood out. They weren't contemporaries of each other, but they were related. One was Enoch. Enoch lived in, says, and pleased God and walked in close fellowship with God for 300 years. And then God just took him out of there and said, I'm getting you out of here. This place is not worthy of you. But he was the only one. So he lived a life in a debauched society without any support whatsoever except the Lord. And what he tells us when we look at his story is, you know what? At least you've got support. You have somebody in your life that's trying to walk with Jesus too. So lift up your head. You know, Enoch was able to do it, but he had to walk in constant fellowship with the Lord. So fix your eyes on Jesus. Do what Enoch did. Who knows? Maybe you'll get out of here sooner than you think. And then we look at Noah, and he did the same thing. He had some support. But God told him to do something that made him stick out like a sore thumb. The Bible says he was a preacher of righteousness. When God told him to build that boat and told him that something was going to happen that had never happened on planet Earth, it took 120 years for him to obey what God told him to do. And he at least had a couple of people hanging in there with him. Preached for 120 years, if you want to look at it from my perspective, and the only people that he was able to rescue were his own family. So I'm way ahead of him. However discouraged I get, I realize I got more than eight people that I know are in the boat and are going to make it. So, but those two guys, different circumstances, God didn't really ask Enoch anything to do. He just said, walk with me, talk with me. Okay, come on, get out of there. Let's, you know, I just want you up here where I am. He did tell Noah something to do, but we see two godly people living their lives by faith. Now we completely shift gears. And I don't know about you, but because Abraham is a central figure in three major world religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and everybody in those billions of people know who Abraham is. I didn't know a lot of stuff about his background, and it became astonishing to me when I studied that he wasn't a godly man living his life with God before God told him to pack up and head to Canaan. He was an idolater. He was a pagan. He grew up in a place called Ur of the Chaldees. Well, it's Mesopotamia. At that time, I looked this up. I looked at the time that Abraham was living and the time that Ur was in its heyday. And at the time that Abraham was living, it was the largest city in the world. So if you're thinking of Abraham living in huts, or, you know, being across between Bear Grylls and Grizzly Adams, you know, just a real outdoorsman. No, he was a city boy. Raised in a family of pagan idolaters. Didn't know who God was. And God came to him. And that's why his story is so astonishing. Let me read you verses 8, 9, and 10. And then I'm going to read verses 13, 14, 15, and 16, just because, and we'll do that next week as well, because it wraps up the story of Abraham and his family. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called. That's the English translation. In Greek, there's a present participle verb in there. It literally reads, being called, he obeyed. Which makes it a little bit more simultaneous, which I find kind of a mess. I'm going to read it that way. By faith, Abraham, being called, obeyed to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Circle the verb in there, knowing, not knowing. It's interesting. It's not what I thought it was. So by faith, when God called him, he left. I'll read you the scriptures from Genesis chapter 12 in a minute that describe that calling. By faith, he obeyed when he was called to go out. And verse 9, by faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as if in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, his son and grandson, the heirs with him of the same promise. Because he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and literally architect is God. I always like that phrase. He was willing to dwell in tents as a stranger in the land that God sent him to. And the reason he was willing to live in tents was because he was waiting for a city that had foundations, which tents don't have. He was looking somewhere else by faith. He is, by definition of faith that we looked at in the beginning of this chapter, the living example of what faith is. Being confident of something without the visible evidence. Being willing to believe a promise when there's no visible evidence of how it could come true. Abraham's probably the best example of that in Scripture. Now let's just flip over to verses 13, 14, and 15, 16. And next week we're going to look at Sarah, Abraham's wife, which in some respects is a bigger hero to me than even Abraham is. And then we'll look at Isaac and how that whole miraculous thing happened. And at the end of that, we'll read these same four verses. Verse 13, these all died in their faith, not having received the promises, not having received the fulfillment of the promises is probably a better way to render that. But having seen them afar off, were assured of them and embraced them and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Because those who say such things declare plainly that they are seeking a homeland. In other words, they're not home yet. We used to sing an old mountain hymn. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. If heaven's not my home, oh Lord, what will I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. It fits right here in this statement. Verse 15, truly, if they had called to mind the country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. In other words, Abraham could have gone back anytime he wanted to. God didn't force him. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country, and therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, because he's prepared a city for them. And I'm going to read those same verses next week after we look at Abraham, Sarah, and Isaac and that whole part of the story. It's all about focus. The essence of faith is obedience. There's no real faith without obedience. You say, God, I believe in you, and I believe what you say, and then we don't obey him. Then what? By our actions, we're saying, no, I don't really believe you. I don't believe you know what's best. You don't know what you're talking about. My way is the best way. And so the essence of faith is obedience, and Abraham is listed as a example of someone who walked by faith and obedience, had a willing heart. The thing I love about Abraham's story, he did some of the bravest things anybody has ever done, simply because he trusted God. But you know what? His faith was not perfect. He got derailed a couple of times. You know, And yet, what I love about Hebrews chapter 11, it's the story of all of these people who are being, this is the hall of fame, so to speak, of faith. People that we should model, their faith should be a model for us. And yet, all of them had quirks and foibles, and all of them, you know, had moments where they had lapses of their faith. And yet, none of that is recorded here. If you read the historical record, it is. But it's so, isn't it encouraging to realize that, you know, because I have moments of brilliance when I obey God. I mean, I moved 4,000 miles because God told me to. And all my family and friends thought I was nuts for doing it. And I'm still here, pastoring a little tiny church, and I left something that looked a lot more effective to do this. Simply because I believe God told me to. Not everybody understands that. So Abraham's an example to me of somebody that just dropped what he was doing and followed what God told him to do. But I'm so comforted that he didn't do it perfectly. And yet he's still set as an example. When he got derailed, he eventually got back on course. He got halfway to where God told him to go, and he got pressure from his family, and he got stuck in a place until the source of the pressure died, basically. And the pressure ceased, and then he continued on his way. And then he got afraid because conditions in Canaan were pretty bad, and he took another detour and almost ruined everything. But he got back on track. And the wonderful thing is, though Abraham's faith was not perfect, God still kept his promises to him. And he's still listed here as an example for us to follow. So, he's a city boy. I didn't know that. I don't know why. I had never really looked at. I knew the basic stories of Abraham's faith and the promise of a son when he and Sarah were both barren, and the whole thing on Mount Moriah, which we'll look at next week, and the whole thing of the calling, but I never knew anything about him personally. And I don't you find it astonishing that here's a guy in generations of idol worshipers in a pagan land, and God comes to him. And God picks him out. He's really not an important person. You're just a guy. He was the youngest son in an unimportant family in the largest city in the world. A kid sitting on a curb in the Bronx, you know. And out of all of those people, God picks him and says, I have something for you to do. And God had plans that were so huge for Abraham. I mean, it's affected us to this day. But it was all God's doing. God always takes the initiative in such things. But the reason that, because I've asked myself, when I look, the more details I look about Abraham, I think, why him? The reason that he's revered by three major world religions is he was called the friend of God. By God. That's a pretty impressive resume. But I've often looked at him and thought, well, why him? I think if we look at this story, we can maybe understand, because God knows the end from the beginning, and God is always calling people to do things that it's impossible to do it without his help. So that's, as far as God is concerned, that's never going to hang him up. Whenever he calls us to do something, he knows we can't do it by ourselves. When I moved out here, I was here a short period of time, and I quickly began to see, you know, I don't really fit here very well. It seemed like what I'm doing here doesn't seem to be very efficient. It seemed like it was more effective out there. And Lord, I don't understand why you called me. And he said the most amazing thing. He said, well, because I knew you'd say yes. You mean that's it? Yeah. Plus, he has a plan. Why did he call Abraham? Why did he pick that guy out of that city, idol worshiper, to reveal himself to? Stephen tells us in his last speech before he was executed, Stephen tells us in Acts chapter 7 that the Lord of glory, the God of glory, appeared to Abraham. Let me read it to you there in Acts chapter 7. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Haran. And God said to him, get out of your country and from your relatives and come to a land that I will show you. I looked up the word appeared because here's this short little innocuous statement. Here's this guy in the middle of a huge city of idol worshipers, and God comes to him and says, I want you to pack up and go to some place that I'm going to show you. Leave everything, and I'll show you when you get there, and I've got great plans for you. And he did. Yeah, despite the few little detours, when he finally arrived in Canaan, he was 75 years old. And when he died in Canaan, he was 175 years old. So he disrupted his whole life because God appeared to him and told him to do something, and he apparently was convinced enough that it was the real God that he was willing to take that journey that knew who knows how long it took, and then to spend 100 years living in that land in tents. Talk about that if I ever get on the stick here. So something had to be pretty impressive to get his attention. It is interesting that that verse 8 starts with, by faith Abraham obeyed. He believed, he put all of his trust in the fact that it was God that told him to do something, even though he didn't know God. Something convinced him it was God enough that he stuck with it for over 100 years. Just like Noah. Don't you wonder? I've seen too many movies. But don't you wonder how Noah knew it was God? Because obviously he did, because he spent 120 years, 360 days on the Babylonian calendar per year doing what God told him to do. So something very convincing. Now look, this word appeared up just because I was hoping to be something really jazzy, you know, some really cool word. You know what a word guy I am. I wrote it down here somewhere. Optonomai is the verb. It's the middle voice of optonomai. It's a fat word. It means to cause someone to gaze upon you with wide open eyes as if it were extremely remarkable. God did something that visibly got his attention. Now let's flip over to, you don't have to flip there. I'll just read it to you. Genesis chapter 12, and we'll look at the historical record in Genesis of this event, and we'll hear a little bit of what God told him to do. The Lord had said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, your father's family, go to the land that I will show you. And those are really important words, because God's not sending him on a mission. God's going with him on the mission, and that changes everything. To the land I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you'll be a blessing to others. I will bless those that bless you, and I will curse those that treat you with contempt, and all of the families on earth will be blessed through you. That's a pretty tall order. When he finally got to the land of Canaan, despite, like I said, a detour along the way, it was then when he was in the land that God promised him that he was going to possess the land and all of his descendants after him were going to possess the land. But that promise wasn't given to him. God just said, go, leave everything, and I'll show you when you get there. So put yourself in Abram's place. You're living in the largest city in the world. Cosmopolitan city. Excavations that they've done, studies that they've done and stuff found in Ur, I mean, there are mathematical equations they found there that they still haven't been able to fully solve. They found, is it Pythagoras? They found Pythagoras's theorem in essence in Mesopotamia hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before there was a Pythagoras. Art, science, medicine. I don't know why we think of anything that old as this. They got clubs and they're living in caves and they're og and bonking each other, but no, this was a very highly developed civilization. You know how cities are. Cities, you tend to get stuck there. Your whole life revolves around there, and God says, okay, I want you to leave all of this and go someplace that I'll show you. And he was apparently so sure that it was God that told him that he did. And that is pretty impressive to me. I love that God was the initiator. I love that God was calling him on a journey where he was going to lead him step by step. Why do we hate that? That's why we sang that song tonight, by the way. Why is it that we insist on having the whole plan all laid out before us before we'll follow? That's basically it. Yeah. I've analyzed it many times, and I've looked at me when I'm that way, and you know what it comes down to? My security, when my security is in, I gotta know where this is all gonna go before I'll follow. What I'm really saying is, if you just tell me, I won't bug you anymore. And really, and God says, yeah. And if I just told you the way it was all going to go, you wouldn't need me at all, would you? You'd never talk to me. And God says, that's not what I want. It's not about getting you from point A to point B. It's about you and I going together. It's about you depending on me every day. Think about it. What if God told you to do something and you realized that you didn't have the slightest idea where it was that you were going? Unless he told you day by day, step by step, and all your friends see you packing up everything and getting ready to leave, and they say, well, where are you going? And you say, well, I don't know. Well, if you don't know where you're going, how will you know when you get there? And you say, God will show me. How ridiculous that sounds to us. You know what's really sad? That should actually be normal for Christians. But the sad thing is, if you lived your life walking with God one day at a time and just following his directions one day at a time, you know you're going to get criticized as much by church people as you are by anybody. Because people don't live their lives that way. And the problem with when we're insisting on God, given us all the information so we don't actually really need him and we don't really have to trust him, and then we miss out. We miss out on the blessing of God providing every single day of his fellowship. We miss out on the miraculous. I've asked myself many times, why aren't there more people like Abraham? Why aren't there more people that if God said, give everything away, they'd give everything away? Why aren't there more Christians that if God said go there, they would go there? And why are there so many that when they see somebody do that, think they're nuts? And the answer is that we don't understand the life of faith and obedience the way that these people did, and the way that some today do. We look at people when they live their lives like Abraham did, and we just think, wow. They're a super saint, and God looks at him and says, no, that's just somebody that trusts me. That's just somebody that does whatever I tell him to do. Why does it look so abnormal to us? We mostly ask God to bless us in our comfort zone, don't we? That's about the extent of our faith. Oh, God, I've got this nice little comfort zone. Here's all my parameters. More pillows, please. And God just bless me in my comfort zone, which sometimes he does. But we miss the life of adventure. We miss the fellowship with God that people who follow him are experiencing. I think that's the secret of being a friend of God. Why was Abraham called the friend of God? Day one, God called him. The language is very clear in the Greek, in verse 8 of chapter 11 of Hebrews. Abraham being called obeyed. There's a couple of ways you can read that. It means that as soon as God revealed himself and spoke those words to him, Abraham started packing. It could mean that would be faithful to the Greek. It could also mean that he kept doing that every day. Every day as he was being called today, okay, Lord, where are we going today? And God would say, follow me. Every day he obeyed as he was being called. It could mean both of those things. I think that's the secret of being a friend of God. God isn't my consultant when I run out of ideas. You know what I mean? God's my life. He's the one I'm walking with every day. I'm getting all my support, my direction from him, and I'm living for him. And God looks at that and says, there's my friend. And Abraham's sure a good example of that, isn't he? Even though he did not do it perfectly. God says, leave your people, leave your dad's household. Well, Abraham didn't actually do that. He actually took his dad with him and his nephew. He did leave Ur, which he was, you know, told to do. That was pretty brave. But it cost him a delay by not obeying exactly what God told him to do. I love the phrase. It says, Abraham, being called, obeyed to go out to the place that he would receive as inheritance. Now, he didn't know it was going to be his inheritance until he got there. That part of the promise wasn't spoken to him until he actually got to Canaan when he was 75 years old. But listen to the phrase, and he went out not knowing where he was going. This became thrilling to me. This was one of those things, one of those last minute things. I thought all my studying was done. I spent 7 or 8 hours studying on this. Thought I looked all the words up. And then I had my Bible zipped up and it was stuck in my briefcase and I was all ready to come to church. And the Lord spoke to my heart and said, you know, there's a couple of words in there you didn't look up. And so please don't be like me. One of the words he showed me was the word knowing. And I said, I know all the Greek words for knowing. And he said, maybe you don't. He was tricking me. Because I looked this up and it's a word that's not normally translated knowing. It's the word epistemai, epistomai. Here's what it means. It means to run over and over in one's mind, to put one's attention to concentrate one's mind upon, epistemai. And all of a sudden, it just changed the meaning of that whole sentence. The Amplified Bible, if you have an Amplified Bible, just nailed this absolutely perfectly. It says that Abraham went, although he did not know or trouble his mind about where he was going. So what it's saying is that Abraham's faith displaced any worries that he would have had about where it was that God was taking him. What his life was going to be like, didn't think about it. Didn't mull it over in his mind. You know what the Quakers have a saying? The best time to obey is immediately, before you let in the reasoner. Isn't that a great phrase? Doesn't sound like a Quaker would say that? That's my family background. Because what happens? The only thing worse than the reasoner is the reasoners, your friends, your family. That's what got Abraham hung up more than once. God told him to do something. He was just about to do it, and people started talking to him, and he got derailed. But in this particular case, when he answered the call and set out, he did not trouble his mind about what it was going to look like when he got there. I read one commentary that I thought was fabulous. It was written by somebody that knows the way that 21st century Christians think. Okay, God, I'll consider your proposal, and I will consider obedience, but can you know what's in it for me? You know, and here's what this commentator said. He said, Abraham did not have a brochure of all of the attractive aspects of Canaan to lure him out of his home city. God didn't have told him nothing about what to expect. And yet he still trusted God enough. It's the interesting thing about faith, when you are walking in faith and you're walking with God, and which means you're obeying him, and you're doing that one step at a time, you get better at it. You get muscles. I love that Henry Blackaby quote. I'm glad I have a chance to say it again, that one I said on Sunday, is that if you are walking in close fellowship with God today, each day, tomorrow, you'll be in the center of God's will. That's how you do it. You just do it one day at a time, walking with God. And Abraham just got better at it and better at it and better at it. And if you stop to look at it, as scary as it might sound, to just pack up and leave the only life you know and go off into the unknown just because God, the real God, comes to you and tells you he'll show you where to go. And to do that and to follow through with that for over 100 years, as scary as that sounds, that was not the scariest thing that Abraham did. But because he obeyed that, imperfect as he was, the farther he got down the road, the more his faith muscles grew. And then when God asked him to do the really hard things, it was not hard. That's how it works, folks. Our faith is developed by obeying and trusting. When we don't obey because we don't trust, when we cave in and to fear, then those muscles don't grow, and we can't even get over this initial hump. And God is always looking down the road. He's always looking down the road at the things that he wants to do. He gives us the opportunity to obey now, to see that he's trustworthy, to do that step by step by step by step like Abraham did. And then when all of a sudden he lays a really impossible to believe promise on us, like we'll look at next week, it's not as hard to believe. I want to talk about Sarah next week because Sarah's my hero. Because God didn't talk to her, not least originally. She just packed up and left because Abraham said, we heard God and we're out of here. And she supported him in that journey of faith. And you know what happened? She became a woman of faith, although her faith wasn't perfect either. And she's listed as a woman of faith. You know how you become a woman of faith or a man of faith? Sometimes it's by hanging out with other people that are a man of faith or a woman of faith, and it rubs off on you. And of course, the reverse works too. If I'm hanging around people that are living for the earth and riddled with fears and worries, that rubs off on you too. So it's next week we'll look at the example of Sarah, and I'm looking forward to that. So I got off track here. Where was I? Abraham being called obeyed. Interesting wording in the Greek text. You know how much I like participles. That's a present participle. Means that the action of obeying and the action of being called were simultaneous. They happened at the same time. So that either happened at when he first heard God speak to him or saw God reveal himself to him in Ur, or it could have been every single day after that. That's the nature of what it would have had to be, isn't it? For him to follow through. I want to say this again, and I hope I'm not harping on this, but I've discovered this in my life. Whenever God covers my eyes as to what's next, whenever my future is blank, I have no idea what's going to go, you know what I do? I listen harder, and I stay closer, and I walk close with him. You know what happens when I think I know where the plot line's going? I'm out there. I don't need God at all, actually, unless something goes wrong. And the whole point of God calling Abraham and the whole point of God calling you wasn't just what he was going to do when he got there. It was 7,500 years of walking daily with God and learning to know him and learning to trust him so that your whole life becomes a life of obedience and faith. And that's what God is always more interested in than we think. So sometimes in order to do that, he just doesn't tell you where you're going. He just says, follow me. You don't need to know because he says, because I know where we're going. And the cool thing about Abraham, don't know about Sarah. We know they had different personalities, but they wound up, there was a point at which God told Abraham, listen to your wife, Abraham, because right now she's listening to me and you're not. You're out of it, buddy. So, I mean, they have an interesting relationship, I think. And we'll talk more about that next week. Where was I going with that? The more that you obey, the easier it is to obey. The more that you drag your feet, the easier it is to drag your feet. So Abraham, at least initially, just jumped right to it. And did not, it says here, trouble his mind. That's what not knowing where he was going means. He just didn't hassle. He didn't stay awake at night saying, oh no, what was I eating when I thought God spoke to me? Was that really God? Is there really a God? No, he didn't trouble his mind with that at all. I have found, too, that gets easier to do the more you do it. John Corson said something fabulous on the subject of faith, and I don't know if he got it from somebody else, but he's the one I heard say it, so I'll give him credit. He said, true faith is obeying despite the consequences. Isn't that great? See, now here's the problem. That all of a sudden gives new light to disobedience, doesn't it? When Abraham disobeyed, when he broke this pattern, you know why? What it was all about the fact that he started to worry about the consequences. And when he did that, he got derailed. When he stopped worrying about the consequences and just did what God told him to do, he was okay. So the God of glory, Stephen says in Acts 7, appeared to Abraham convincingly. And when Abraham, here in 11, chapter 11, verse 8, says when Abraham was called, he obeyed. Let me read you something that one of the commentaries read, and I thought it was really good. It's the mercy and grace aspect of this. It's why Abraham is inspiring to me and comforting to me, because he didn't do it perfectly. Just like I don't do it perfectly. We were talking the other day, Julie and I were talking about our experiences with God laying a brand new car on us, because it happened to me as well. And when God does something like that and you're poor, invariably there's a test that's going to happen very shortly when you don't have money to put gas in the new car that you have sitting out in your driveway. And this happened to me one time when I was sitting there weeping at my table because I did not have gas money to get to the next gig that I had to do. I knew after I got there, I would sell some of my albums and I would be okay after that. But none of my friends had any money. And I'm sitting here and I'm weeping, man of God that I am. Now, granted, this was about 40 years ago. And I'm crying because I'm thinking, and God spoke to me and he said, what is your problem? And I says, I don't have gas money for my car. And he said, what car? And I looked up and I'm pointing out and it says that car. And he says, oh, where did that car come from? And then I thought, I'm being tricked here, aren't I? The car came from you. And he says, so do you think I would lay a car on you and then and never provide for you to get to do what I've called you to do, which is why I gave you the car to begin with? And I realized I just had no faith whatsoever. I got so easily sidetracked. That's what happens when you let the reasoner in. So listen to this mercy and grace thing. This is one of the commentaries I read said this. By faith, Abraham obeyed. He did step out in faith. He went to a new place that God had promised him, but his faith was less than perfect. In Acts 7 and Genesis 12, it becomes evident that Abraham first went only halfway. That was because of family pressure to the place that God called him to go. And eventually, he obeyed completely, but only eventually. And yet now, thousands of years later, we read the Hall of Fame of Faith, and God doesn't even record the delayed obedience, only the faith. Isn't that thrilling? There's a supremely simple and logical reason why that is because when God calls us, he knows we can't do it. He knows we are going to need him. He knows from the get-go all of the mistakes we're going to make. He knows that the times we're going to be reluctant or afraid and get derailed. That's all in the equation. He also knows what he's going to perform in our lives. He knows the end from the beginning. When God calls you to do something, he's already looking at the end product. He's already factoring in what he's going to do. So he's not put off by our struggle. Being a man of faith doesn't mean you never struggle. It just means your faith wins in the struggle. I was listening, by the way, I heartily recommend online if you want to listen. Fred did a study on this that we have under special guest speakers on our website. And Pastor Wayne also did this study. Those were very interesting. It was really interesting hearing Fred's side of the when God moved them to Maine. It sounded similar to when God moved me here. That's why I'm deeply convicted by the verb tenses when in Hebrews 11:8, where it says that Abraham being called obeyed. It's like, yes, sir, right away, sir. I fasted and prayed for 3 months before I packed up my U-Haul and headed out here. So I'm not that great of a man of faith. But you know what? I'm here. And you guys are here. Abraham did pack up and leave immediately, but he did almost immediately get derailed. And so he followed through. I just find this so comforting that, yes, you can be a man or a woman of faith, and even if you don't do it perfectly, just keep following. Keep obeying. Stay close. Do what he tells you to do. It gets easier the more that you do. So verse 9, that was verse 8. Verse 9 says that by faith also, by the way, perhaps we should define the word faith. It, in essence, the best definition I've found of it, the Amplified Bible says it is trusting in, clinging to, relying upon God. And in the beginning of Hebrews 11, it says it's doing that despite visible evidence. Whether the visible evidence looks contrary or whether there is no visible evidence at all, to back up what you are trusting in. It's having the conviction to trust in God, to lean upon him, to rely upon him, and then to obey and take action. So by faith, when he was called, he obeyed and he went. And then verse 9, by that same faith, by trusting in, relying on, clinging to God. By the way, every day, for 100 years, that's not in the margins, but you know, you could read one little sentence and not realize that this sounds so easy until you stretch it out over 100 years. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as if in a foreign country. 100 years, dwelling in tents, eventually with Isaac and eventually with Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. Dwelt. Important word, the verb. I'll give you the Greek word if you're interested. I know Sandra writes them down. The Greek word is paroikeo, P-A-R-O-I-K-E-O, paroikeo. It's the word for a resident alien. It means you're there, you're living there, but you're not a citizen. You know you're not a citizen. And boy, you can see the can't you see how this applies to the Hebrew Christians that this letter is written to, who are just feeling like they don't fit in to their society? They're feeling like God's asking them something that's so unreasonable because they don't fit in. And so he's just pointing right back to Abraham and said, you know, Abraham was in this very land that you live in for 100 years, and he lived as if he was a resident alien living in a tent, even though it was a land that God promised. I think doing anything for that long of a period of time would be difficult to maintain your focus and your obedience, even if there were no resistance. That's, I think, why Enoch and Noah are so impressive to me. Enoch had no support at all. And Noah only had a few people, and then he had to marry into some of those. And there was tremendous resistance. So here's Abraham. He plops into Canaan, into the promised land. You know what was in living in Canaan at that time? Giants. Many cities filled with giants. I mean, there's archaeological evidence, bones, skeletons of people who were 12 feet tall. Remember Goliath, whose name in Hebrew is Goliath, which I find much less fearsome of a name, like Goliath and the Three Bears is what I would think of, but that's his name in Hebrew. Goliath had four brothers, and all four of them were over 9 feet tall. They were sort of leftover vestiges much, much later of all of these giant tribes. But you know what? They were 3 feet shorter than the average height of some of the tribes. There was a king. I remember his name because it only has two letters in it. His name was Og. It's the king of one of these tribes, fortified city. This is where Abraham is living. There's a historical record that offers the length of his casket or his bedstead. They're not sure which one, doesn't matter, except that it was 13 feet long. So here's Abraham. Now, God, I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to step out. He gets all the way to Canaan, and now he's in Canaan, and he's in Canaan for 100 years where everybody is 5 feet taller than him. And so he's going to, by faith, by trusting in God, he's going to live in a tent. I don't want to live in a tent in a land where there's giants. I want, you know, barbed wire fences, you know, machine guns around the perimeter. I want some protection. But he lived in that land by faith. Hostile people. The Canaanites were some of the most barbaric people that have ever lived on the face of the earth. In fact, God said when he told Joshua to come in and take over the land, he said, I'm giving you guys this land not because you're wonderful. I'm giving you this land because I'm taking away from them because they are so horrible. That's how about the Canaan. And that's who Abraham lived with the rest of his life, in a tent. How did he do it? How could he do it? He did raise a family, and there's lots of the story that we know about Abraham takes place while he's there. But he never owned a foot of ground except the burial plots for he and his wife. Lived 100 years there in a tent. It wasn't easy. It was a very unsettled life. You know, another pressure is the two most prosperous cities in the area where Abraham lived a good portion of that were Sodom and Gomorrah. Talk about not fitting in. But there's a reason. Verse 10 tells us the reason why he was willing to live that way for so long. It's because he knew he had a home somewhere else. That's why I read you verses 13, 14, 15, and 16. Because all of the people that were able to live under these circumstances in a hostile world without being able to pad their nest and you know, improve their comfort zone, living in tents. They only did it one way. They did it by trusting in God, and they did it because they knew God had something better for them down the road. Let me read you something one of my commentaries said I thought was really good. Because the word paroikeo that I gave you, that's translated dwelt, the resident alien, another word for it is sojourner. Someone who's just not permanently there, knows they're not permanently there. Let me read you what it says. A resident alien or a sojourner is obvious. They're obvious in the way they talk. They're obvious in the way they dress. They're obvious in their mannerisms, their entertainment, their citizenship, their friends. All of those speak of the home that they are, their native home. If somebody is the same as the world around them, they are no longer sojourners. Christians should not work to blend in to this world, because this world is not home. If we blend in, we're doing something wrong. Our value system is different. It doesn't mean we're supposed to be weird. It just means that if we feel unsettled because we don't fit in, the reason is simple. We don't fit in. We're not supposed to. We belong someplace else. The obvious thing in Canaan was the God that Abraham was serving was totally, completely different God than the people all around him. Obviously, there's going to be a conflict in the way they live their lives. He was willing to do that because he knew there was a permanent place that was coming later. I love that phrase. He was looking for, the Amplified Bible really nails the fatness of this statement, verse 10, because he was waiting expectantly and confidently looking forward to the city which has fixed and firm foundations, whose architect and builder is God. That is poetry. Willing to live in a tent because he knew had a place coming that was a real city with real foundations, permanence. I have discovered that however God blesses my life here, and he's blessed me greatly, there's always an aspect of this world that chafes on me. And there's always an aspect of which I just do not feel at home here. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. I heard a Bible study today I was listening to on the radio, and the guy said, you know, that saying that some Christians are so heavenly minded they're no earthly good, he said, that's silly. He said, my observation is that there are so many Christians that are so earthly minded they're no heavenly good. And I think that's very true. Why do you suppose this example, well, obviously this example was given is because Abraham was the father of the Jewish people. Abraham wasn't Jewish. He was a Gentile, idol worshiper, pagan. The Jews started with him and went from then on. The whole race was born out of him. We'll look at that next week. But to these Jewish Christians, who now, because they believe in Jesus as their Messiah, are being ostracized by their culture. They've been basically, some of their families had funerals for them. My child is dead. You've forsaken the God of our fathers. And so the writer of Hebrews is saying to those discouraged people, hey, but look at your father, Abraham. He left the God of his fathers. He followed the true and living God, just like you're trying to do. And when he finally got to this land that you call the Holy Land, the Promised Land, he didn't fit in either. He knew he wasn't supposed to. He knew he had a home someplace else. So he's saying to these Jewish Christians, that's how you're going to finish your race, brothers and sisters. Do what your father Abraham did. Just consider that if things are hard here, this is not home yet. That's all. You can live here however bad it gets, and believe me, we have it pretty good compared to a lot of our brothers and sisters in the rest of the world, in other cultures. However bad it gets here, we can live it the same way Abraham did, by just trusting in God, one day at a time, one step at a time, trusting and obeying. I like this. This really helped me. I've had my little taste of it in my life where when God spoke to me to originally to move out here, I didn't know one single person on the whole East Coast. I did pray for a long time before I actually packed up and left. And then when I did, my family thought I was crazy. And what the worst part of it was, on my way out here with everything in the that I loved in the rearview mirror, and I'm getting out, I remember getting up on the Continental Divide, just outside of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and tears running down my face and saying, I would not do this for anybody else but you, Jesus, because I feel like I'm driving into the great unknown. My whole future was a question mark. Now, was it to God? Absolutely not. I know you. I mean, we're connected. We love each other. We have a life together. But you didn't exist when I was headed east, driving over the Continental Divide. That was all in God's mind and all in God's heart. Folks, that's the way he looks at the whole story. He knows stuff you don't know. Why don't we trust him? Why don't we just simply say, okay, I belong to him. I'm doing the best I can to obey him today. This is why I have to, every day I have to say, today's my life. I'm going to walk with Jesus today. When it comes tomorrow, I'm going to walk with Jesus tomorrow. If somewhere along the line I have to take a hard right in the path, I'll be right next to him and he can tell me. I don't need to know where we're going. I just need to stay with him because he knows where we're going. That's the essence of faith. Abraham's a really good example of it. If in the meantime, I just love the juxtaposition of verse 8 and verse 9. Verse 8, he left. He just heard from God, and he packed up everything, and he left. Everything that he knew. Looking back to Noah didn't go anywhere. Noah heard God's voice and stayed right where he was for 120 years. Both of them obeyed because they trusted. So by faith, Abraham hears the call and obeys. And then when he gets there, he realizes he's got to live here in this place where he's an alien. He's got to live there the same by the same faith that got him there. Elizabeth Elliot said it this way. She said, in a walk of faith, every step is a step of faith. In a walk of faith, every step is a step of faith. It's kind of pathetically simple and logical, isn't it? You know, I just thought we would get to this point and we wouldn't have to trust God anymore. You know what? Your Heavenly Father loves you too much to let that happen. My experience has been the farther you get down the road, the more you have to trust the Lord. Not the, you know, the more, the, now granted, you're more sure of his provision, but it never stops being faith. Because he wouldn't be doing me any favors, would he? If he says, okay, I'll just give you enough information, I'll give you a big pile of money, and you don't ever have to talk to me again. You don't have to rely upon me, you don't have to ask me for direction because you got your little handy little plan right there. And that's just not the way he's going to do it. It's not the way he's ever done it. So Abraham inspires me. I was feeling so proud of myself that I, you know, packed up and moved 4,000 miles and bounced around a little before I actually wound up here. I had no idea the blessing that was going to be here. I didn't know you. I had no idea what God had in mind. I had no idea the people that were going to be in heaven. Because they heard about Jesus, because I was here. I had no idea about any of that. I also didn't know about the heartache. I didn't know that the hardest things that I've ever gone through have also happened here. The one constant in all of it, all the way across the country, all the way 16 years that I've lived here. Not 100 years, like Abraham, but there are a few parallels, no giants, but some hard things, some emotional giants. The one constant is that when I walk with him, day by day by day, I have what I need. He gives me what I need to live the life. And a lot of blessings thrown in. And of course, when you live that way, that's where you see all the miraculous things happen. Have you noticed the people that are all comfy and cozy and earthly things and don't really ever have to trust God, never really see miraculous things happen? Well, they don't need him. It's the people that have stuck, they've crawled so far out on the limb, and the limb is bending and cracking, that if God doesn't hold them up, they're toast. Those are the people that get to see God do the great things. The thing I wanted us to see, and this is not going anything like I wanted it to go tonight, but the thing I wanted us to see about Abraham is he was a normal guy. He didn't start out being a godly guy. He had no support. Look around you. You have other people that are trying to follow Jesus just like you are. That's what keeps me going. What keeps me going is that I have people in my life that are not living for this world. They're living for Jesus, and it helps me. Abraham had his wife. God bless her. She did support him enough that she was with him all of the way, and she wound up growing in her faith, and they both wound up seeing God do a lot of miracles in their lives. But he was a normal guy. He just heard God's voice. He responded. He believed in enough. He was willing to live that out over the next 100 years or so, the rest of his life, basically. And it's not so much in verses 13, 14, 15, 16, it says, you know, the story didn't stop there. These people who obeyed God in these ways, they only saw a fraction of the promise that God gave fulfilled. We're still reaping the benefits of the promise. They didn't get to see Jesus. They didn't get to see all the nations of the earth be blessed. Well, maybe from the heavenly perspective they do. But in their lifetime they didn't. And yet they died in their faith. So he's saying, hey, you discouraged Jewish Christians, you feel like you don't fit in? Neither did Abraham in this very same land. But he heard the voice of God. And he followed just like you heard the voice of God, and you followed and put your faith in Jesus. So hang in there. If he can do it, you can do it. And you have support. He didn't have any. He lived in hostile territory. Lift up your eyes. Look at who's waiting at the finish line. And trusting in God in the way that Abraham did can help you to run your race. Next week, we'll look at the faith that it took for Sarah to do her part. And we'll look at the miraculous things. We'll look at actually the hardest thing that God asked Abraham to do, which I frankly tell you, I don't think I could do it. But it came towards the end of a life that was spent walking with God and trusting God and being God's friend. And that's why he could do it. So, by faith, Abraham, being called, obeyed, and went out to a place not knowing where he was going, not troubling his mind with what it was going to look like when he got there. And by faith, when he did get there, he was willing to live in a tent as if he were a resident alien, knowing he wasn't going to fit in. Didn't matter to him. He knew God had a better place for him. And eventually, when he got there, God gave him the promise that I'm going to give this whole place to you and your descendants, and still theirs after all these years. Let's pray. Lord, I know I need this. I thank you for the inspiration of Abraham's life. I just thank you for the inspiration of mercy and grace on a guy who didn't do it perfectly, but as best he could, attempted to trust you and to obey you. And got the benefit of walking, scary as it must have started out to be, he got the benefit of walking with you every single day to where you called him your friend. I know I always have the opportunity, Father, however hard it is for me, I always have the opportunity to draw closer to you and to rely upon your friendship, the resources to meet what you are asking me to do are always equal because the resources come from you. You're not going to ever call me to do something that you don't provide for me when I need to do it. Help us to keep this in the front of our minds, Lord, because we get lied to every day. There's all kinds of pressure around us from our world, sometimes from family and even other Christians that are worldly in their view. I pray that we could get our inspiration from you, Lord, to just simply trust you and obey. And to obey immediately as soon as we hear what you tell us to do. And not dilly-dally around and let in the reasoner and wind up getting derailed. So help me, Lord. Help my brothers and sisters. Thank you for the ones that encourage me to stay faithful. I pray like Noah and like Abraham, we could know that live out faithfulness, a long obedience in the same direction. And with your help, Lord, we will do that. In Christ's name we pray, Father. Amen.